12th, announcements next week.
Warren? Warren is a Chicago collector with me. We've been great friends for years. And he got around into issuing records that we never heard here. Of course, you never heard Haunting Blues, but he puts them out by the LP, things that we haven't heard. Warren Platt, who is, how long have you been collecting?
44 years.
44 years, and has more European jazz than any I even imagined existed.
I did want to share an experience that I had a few years back. Really a record collector's dream, because it did turn up a source. John stole my first 3 minutes here, but it did turn up a source of records, jazz records, vintage jazz records that we really hadn't dreamed of. I guess you're all familiar with the jazzmen that went over to Europe in the early 30s, Armstrong and Ellington, Coleman Hawkins, Benny Carter, and so forth. But I was really surprised to learn that as far back as 1927, an American jazz band was playing on the continent and continued up to about 1934. I was also surprised to learn that the band was Lud Gluskin. Now, if you'll recall, Gluskin first came to our attention in the States in 1934 when he took over a program on radio, Summer Interlude, and this was advertised, sponsored by the X-Lax program, or X-Lax company. Later, it was hauled off the air for, quote, offensive advertising. 45 years later, we have this Preparation H commercial. Nobody bothers. At any rate, to start the story off, we have to go back to 1926, when Lud was a drummer in the pit band of the Casino de Paris, which is the sort of the poor man's Folies Bergère in Paris. At that time, there were some 30 musicians in the pit of the Casino de Paris. If you go there today, you'll find there's an electric organ, a drums, and a tape recorder. It's really sad. But in those days, 1926, late 1926, the star of the show was Maurice Chevalier. Maurice looked something like this in those days. That's not Maurice. There he is. This was, of course, before his first visit to America, and he was what they call over there a gros comique, in other words, very ordinary, and not the boulevardier that he became in 1928 when he came over here. But in the band, I forgot to mention one thing. Of these 30 men that were in the band, immediately following the end of the Casino de Paris show, 12 of the fellows would race upstairs to a little nightclub called Le Perroquet. And it was very exclusive, very expensive. And the leader of the band was a fellow by the name of Paul Gazon. Can we have the next slide? I'm going to take the liberty of introducing just a couple of these fellows to you. This is Gluskin on the drums. Faustin Jean-Jean on trumpet, Conservatory Music Prize. This is Gazon, of course. Leo Beauchamp on trombone, who is, we can really safely say, the first Frenchman to play jazz, learned with Mitchell's Jazz Kings from 1918-1919, and Maurice Ciceron here, Boboni on bass, and that's about all we have to worry about now. At any rate, these fellows accompanied Chevalier on a record, and I want you to listen. This band is trying hard to play jazz. They don't quite make it, but Beauchamp is pushing them along. You'll see a lot of Myth Mole influence here. Let's just play the last third of this record.
Moi, je fais mes coups en dessous. Comme ça, voyez-vous, je me faufile partout. comme ça voyez-vous, je me profile partout.
Okay, that'll give you an idea of what the band at Le Perroquet sounded like. Now, as you notice, Gazon was a very handsome gentleman, and this eventually caused his downfall, which we'll explain later. About a month after Lindbergh landed in 1927, a band came over to Paris from Detroit called the Playboys. Could we have that next slide? The Playboys, I'm going to introduce them all, were led by Fred Zierer on the violin. Here we have Ruel Kenyon on piano, Eddie Ritten on trumpet, Ted Goebel of the Goebel Beer family on drums, Buzz Gregg on alto, Doc Sayer on bass, and Merrill Bodge on tenor. They came over to Paris with a contract which fell through completely. The nightclub didn't even exist over there. And they were literally starving until Eddie Ritten, trumpet player, got a contract with the Pathé Company for six sides. Of the six sides, only one was jazz, but it'll give you an idea how a nice band in Detroit sounded in 1927. This is August of 1927, and it's a 12-inch Pathé Hill and Dale recording. Could we try that? Went home. He didn't want to starve in Paris, so he went home right away. And they picked up Ben Pickering, who was floating around Europe and later went with Tommy Dorsey. But at any rate, proceeding on now, I mentioned that Gazon was a very handsome fellow, the leader of the band at the Casino de Paris. He got very friendly with Madame Volterra. The Casino de Paris was owned by Monsieur Volterra. And he didn't favor this at all. He got extremely upset and he dismissed Gazon. Gluskin, always a businessman, jumped in and quickly formed in late December the band that would be playing at the Peril Cave. We have the next slide, please. This is Gluskin's first band, and a couple of the playboys went home, but Gluskin, the ones that were still here, Gluskin snared onto them. So if I can present them first again, Merrill Bodge, Fred Zierer on violin, Eddie Ritten again, Goebel, and Ruel Kenyon. And the clarinet player, Buzz Gregg, went home, and so Gluskin immediately sent back to Detroit, where everybody was from, for a replacement. And it was between Jimmy Dorsey and Gene Prendergast. Well, luckily they chose Gene Prendergast, because Prendergast is absolutely the answer to any jazz discographer's dream. He not only had a fantastic memory, but he kept a diary. So for the first time, we were able to actually date some of these early Pathé, French Pathé records, and some of the Tri-Ergon in Germany and so forth. Wonderful guy, and if it wasn't for him, none of this would have been possible. But at any rate, on April 4th, 1928, they had made records before, but on April 4th, 1928, they made a very nice record of Miss Annabel Lee. Now we have the whole Gluskin band with some of the Pitt people from the Casino de Paris, Léo Beauchamp, this is Gluskin, Faustin Jean-Jean, Pavoni, and Cizeron, Maurice Cizeron. Now, on this Pathé record, this is a regular cut, you'll hear Prendergast playing an alto, very reminiscent of Trumbauer. These fellows were all from Detroit. You'll hear probably the first scat vocal ever recorded on the continent by Prendergast again. Some nice work by Ruel Kenyon over there, who's still active in Ann Arbor, by the way. A little bit by Fred Zierer on the violin. Eddie Ritten takes a nice bit on trumpet. Where's Eddie? There he is. And behind the whole thing, Léo Beauchamp still pumping away. Can we hear that one?
What's the date?
Miss Annabel Lee.
What's the date?
April 4th, 1928.
Thank you. Thank you.
phrase, a toast to Paris. And they went on to Biarritz to play a summer session down there. And while they were there, they got a contract for Germany. And they opened in Germany at the Barbarina in December of 1928. In January, for 3 months, they went over to the Ambassadors. And there were a few changes in personnel now. And if I could have the second from the next slide. Yeah. Here's the band on the stage of the Haus Germania, which was a sort of a roof garden in Berlin. We have still Faustin Jean-Jean and Eddie Ritten on trumpet. Beauchamp joined Jack Hilton in London, and his place was taken by Emile Christian, the trombone player of the Dixieland Jazz Band. New piano player came in, and also an arranger, Paulie Freed. Here we have the fabulous Spence Clark, who's holding a guitar, which he played, but he's best known, of course, for bass sax. A new violin, Raphael Brogiotti, Jim Kelly on drums, Howard Kennedy on banjo, and here's Gene Prendergast again, and we're getting a little hazy here. This is Pavoni, I think. This is George, that's George Charon, and this is Serge Glickson. At any rate, they did, Paulie Freed was given sheet music one evening and told that they had to record the next morning for a Hammerchord in Berlin. And he dashed off this arrangement of You Took Advantage of Me, which is very nice. Thank you. successful in Europe, and later, during the time they were at the ambassadors, they made a short subject. As far as I can determine, this was a UFA production starring a black dancer by the name of Barbara LeMay. And they just, in one of the sequences, about seven, I guess, of the Luskin boys accompanied her. This is on a 12-inch label I've never seen before or since, British Phototone, and it's obviously to be synchronized, as it says on the label, with the film. Anyway, they're doing a pretty hot version of That's a Plenty. And oh, before you start that, I just wanted to mention, you'll hear the band laying back at one time. Apparently, Barbara LeMay is doing her thing, whatever that is, and you'll hear some applause, and then at the very end, some more applause.
Has the picture ever been found?
Not by me.
Just the disc.
Northern part of France, just across by the channel there. Could we have the one before this one, please? While they were up there, get these uniforms, incidentally. One of their old pals from Detroit joined them, Jimmy Dorsey. Here we have Howard Kennedy, Pauly Freed, Gene Prendergast, Eddie Ritten. This is a fellow that was in Ray Ventura's band, Jack Rosselli, and apparently an American who was singing over there, never been able to identify him. But anyway, in October of 1929, the fellas were recording for Deutsche Grammophon, and they'd done they're incidentally recorded six sides at a time in those days, and they had finished up five sides in a hurry. And they had a little time, so they worked out a head arrangement of a jazz tune, just seven of the Gluskin people, which is, many collectors say it's the best Meilenberg Joys ever recorded. It was certainly the best jazz record recorded on the continent to date. It's got a lot of Chicago, its style, it's got everything in it. Would you roll that one, please?
Thank you.
That was close to the end of 1929, and during that last 3 months of 1929, Gluskin signed exclusive contracts with 5 recording companies in Germany. So when they came back in 1930, there was very little recording. And toward 1931, in 1931, there was no recording at all. The Depression was beginning to be felt over in Europe, and plus the fact the Nazis were beginning to start. Gluskin and several of the boys were Jewish and were not welcome in Germany anymore. The jobs got fewer and farther between. And finally, in 1932, they were doing maybe 4 recording dates a year. However, in one of these dates, Danny Polo, the famous Chicago clarinetist, was floating around Europe, and he joined them. We're now in October of 1932, and we'll see how the band has transformed itself into what's really approaching a swing band. Danny Polo is taking the solos on alto and on clarinet, 2 full choruses of each, or 1 full chorus of each, and the trombone, as I remember, is a Frenchman by the name of Guy Paquinet. So let's listen to Dinah.
Thank you.
1933, there were just two sessions, all very commercial. I should say, should add that while they were in Europe, the Gleskin Band made over 450 sides, and probably 10% have hot solos in them. At any rate, in compiling all these data and so forth, I had talked to, I think, just every one of the band members, and they began to say, well, hey, let's get together, let's see each other. They hadn't seen each other maybe for 45 years. So the upshot of it was a reunion in Detroit in 1976. If we could have the next slide. Here's the boys now. Some of them you haven't heard, but Buzz Gregg from the original Playboys, Fred Zerer from the Playboys, here's Gluskin, of course, Eddie Ritten, Ruel Kenyon, and Merrill Bodge. And here we have Spence Clark, a banjo player, John Castellucci, who came in later, Gene Prendergast, Leo Beauchamp, very successful arranger now in Hollywood, and this is your narrator here, I think, Pauly Freed. And it was a very, very moving experience to see these fellows greet each other after all these years. So I had a little trouble topping that, but they all wanted tapes and some sort of record of these jazz tunes that they made in Europe. So the only thing left to do was put out an LP of the Gluskin Band. And that got pretty good reviews, and I began corresponding with quite a few of the collectors in Europe, and they came up with 16 more hot sides, so we got out of volume two, I think. And I'm about four good hot sides short of volume three, which I hope I'll have for the next meeting. Thanks very much.